Okay, good afternoon. Let's see. So, let's see. I guess, oh, I have a direct message. Yeah, I guess some people are having some outage issues today. But anyway, let's see. So some people are here. And the plan for today, let's see, we were in the middle of this proof involving number theory. And then we want to move on to set theory. And in both of them are examples where we can make use of the logic that we've been building up before. So let me just finish off this proof and then continue from where we were with set theory. Okay, so last time, if you recall, we looked at this claim and ran through our usual steps, finding some examples and trying to work out a reasonable way to do the logic, and we decided this was a good choice. And then we ran through the steps that seemed to be involved, and we got to an answer. And all that's left is to pack it all together into an actual written proof. So let me just do that last step. So proof. Okay, let's see. So so if I look over here, it says that we want to assume that A, B, and P are integers. With, and then we had three things that we wanted to be true. So one of them, P prime. And the second was let's see, it says over here that P divides AB. And the last one was that P does not divide A. Okay, so that was the set of assumptions that we had. One, okay, and now let's see. So two. So we're supposed to work out that this GCD is one. Okay, hence, and where did that come from? The only divisors of P are one and P. The only positive divisors of P are 1 and P. So the only positive common divisor, so GCD of P and A is equal to 1, okay? And it's arguable that we should maybe restate this, but I just stated that P does not divide A right here. So that's where that came from. Okay, so we have this part here. So we have this is equal to one. And so then we're supposed to use our theorem. So hence theorem 1.8.1, there are X and Y. With this formula, 1 is equal to, write it this way, so x times p plus y times a, okay? So that's what it gives us, is that we can write the GCD as a... yes, so someone's asking a question. Yes, if you're unable to submit the homework, please contact the TA at when you can, and we'll figure that out. Okay, so yeah, you can still turn it in later if there's a power issues with submitting it. Yeah. Okay. Right. So we end up with this property here. Okay. And so let's see. So then next on my little list here is this. So also we have that AB is divisible by P. So we have that AB, there is N. With AB equals PN. There is NP. Okay, so that's what we had here. Let's see. So then what's next on my little list? So this equation gave us this one here. So we have that equation right here. So we can multiply it by B, and we get B time is equal to multiplying the other side by B. Also, we get BX P plus YAB. Okay, just multiplying both sides by B. So, and then we can take our AB and plug it in, and we get, let's see, step five here. B is equal to B times X times P plus Y times, and now we can replace the AB with the NP, okay, which is equal to BX plus YN times P. And I guess we should have put it a little earlier, but we have that BX plus YN is an integer. Okay, so we're done. So therefore, P divides B, Q, E, D, and we're done. Okay, any questions about how to turn that scribbled scratch work over here into a easier to follow proof? Okay. All right, so then the next topic is chapter 2, which is set theory. And this carries, unlike number theory, this is sort of has an interesting relationship to the first order logic, in that one contains the other and the other contains the one in both directions. Let me just make a couple of notes. So one way we're going to think about set theory is just another type of mathematics to which we can apply our first order logic and do proofs. So so we will consider set theory using first order logic. Okay, but also when we're doing first order logic, there are sets in the background, okay? But also sets arise in first order logic automatically. Any first order logic involves sets. And I would say there are sort of two main ways that it does. Can anyone think of a set that arises when we're doing propositional calculus, these propositions?
I guess the set of quantifiers.
Yeah, so the thing over which we quantify, right. So the set that they were quantifying over. So which is the, we call it the universe. So the universe U is a set. Okay, so whenever we're asking about a proposition inside of a universe, and the other place that it comes up is the truth set, if you may recall, for a proposition. So B, if P is a P of X is a proposition with a variable, in a universe U, then we get a set, the truth set of P is, and let me just write it out in set notation, which we're gonna do a lot of right now. So it's a good example of it. So it's the set of all X in this universe U, so that, P of X, and sometimes we try P of X, but let me just note that is true. Okay, so that's a set associated to a proposition. And actually, the work that we're going to be doing with notations and operations on sets are going to have counterparts in logic, and it's a pretty clean relationship. So you might try to think about how those are related, and eventually we'll come up with a dictionary. So consider a relationships between operations on sentences and propositions like and, or, implies, those sorts of things, and on sets. Okay, so we're going to have things like union and intersection and subsets, so, and those two things are related. Today I'm just going to introduce the sets, and you should just keep in the back of your mind this relationship, and we'll come back to that. But it will inform the way that you run around proving things. Okay, but that's just kind of the setup. And now we can go to some sets. And so I already used some set notation here. Okay, let me just do some examples so one gets used to a little bit more of the examples of the set notation. So set notation examples. Let me just play around with this set. It's the set 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's just got those elements in it, 3, 4, 5, 6. Already I've used some of the notation elements. And another way to write to that is more along the lines that we have over here. It's the set of all X in some universe, let's say it's Z, and then I can put conditions over here. So I could say that, say X is greater than or equal to 3, and X is less than or equal to 6. So that's one way to express that set, 3, 4, 5, 6. And actually, another way the text often uses is they just use a colon where I'm using a bar. They're the same thing, okay? That's another way to write it. Let's see, another way to do this is you could just have the set X and put the condition that it's in Z as one of the conditions. So you could have over here, X is in Z, and then have the other conditions. And maybe you could combine those. So you could say 3 is less than or equal to X is less than or equal to 6. So these are all just different ways to write that same set. Okay, any questions about that notation or why those are the same set? Okay, all right, and then a little bit of commentary about that. So this has four elements. Okay, so that's one thing that we would say about the set. And to add a little bit more notation, we write, so one of the elements is 3, so we can write 3, and then this little element of sign, and then our set, 3, 4, 5, 6, or any other way of describing it. Okay, so this this is an element of, okay, so that's a standard bit of notation. And let's see, we can also write, say, 2 is not an element of, so you put a little bar through it. Okay, And let's see. So here's a point of that can be a little bit confusing. So let me just note it right now to get it up front here. But actually, let me add one more bit of notation, and then I'll get to it. So, and that's subset notation. So if I take 3 and 4 together, that's another set. And this symbol means is a subset of, and it's say the same set, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. All right. And so here's the point of confusion. Oh, so let me just continue my notations here. So annotations. So this is a subset of. All right, so those are two different sets. Okay, so let me write these two things here, and you can tell me which symbol goes in between. So I have brace 3 and I just have 3. Okay. So this is so if I look at that first one, is this an element? No, it's not, right? So I could write either it's a subset or I could write it's not an element if I wanted to. Right? That would be true. And whereas this one is an element, but it's not a subset. So I could write that it's not a subset. Okay. What about this? Could I have 3 is an element of something?
Yeah, if it's a set of sets.
Yes, exactly. That's right. So I could have the element which is the set 3 and maybe the set 1, 5, 6. Okay. So how many elements does that second set have, the one that I just wrote? Two, exactly. Right. This is one element. That's another element. It doesn't matter how complicated each element is. We just count them separately as two different things. So this has 2 elements. I guess I should have written that in red. Anyway, so that's just getting used to the set notation. Okay, any questions about that notation? Okay, let me do one more bit of notation and then write out a little bit more formally the notion of subset so that we can get it closer to our first order logic. And then we can try some theorems and proofs using this. So the last bit of notation I want to write out is power sets. And actually it turns out this is something that makes the distinction between set theory and first order logic kind of interesting, is because this is kind of an operation you can't really do in first order logic. It becomes a higher order, but you can here. And so we have this power sets, and this is the script P is the notation that we use. Okay. And if I take the script P of any set, let me just do an example and then write out more carefully. So the script P of the set 2, 3 is supposed to be, so script P means all subsets. So it's the set of subsets. I guess that's not a sentence, it's a noun phrase. All right, so it's the set of subsets. And so so let's just start listing them. What are some subsets of this set 2, 3? Yes, someone was very quick with that. All right, so those are 3. I claim there's one more. What's one more?
The set phi.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So several people said it there. Yep. Yeah. And there it is in the comments. Yeah. So there's the empty set. Let me write it as just 2 braces. And then there's the set was just the singleton 2, the set was just the singleton 3, and the set we started with both elements 2 and 3. And that, so that's the power set. And as mentioned, someone called this by another name, and that's very reasonable. So this has several names. It goes by the name of phi. I usually use that phi, although some typesetters use a slightly different font for their phi, but there's a phi. And it's also called the empty set. And this article, the rather than a, is justified by the fact that all empty sets are equal. Why is there an empty set? Yes, okay. So let me write down the definition of a subset, because I haven't done it yet. And then we can check the answer to this question that's come up here in the chat. Why is there the empty set? Okay, so I have said that the set of subsets is what we want. So this is supposed to be all the subsets. And so we just have to make sure that that is in fact a subset. So let me just write down the definition of subset so that we have one, and then we can check that it is in fact a subset. Okay, the empty set is a subset. So definition. All right, so we say that A is a subset of B. So if we have two sets. Then A is a subset of B. If, okay, and so what we have is that anytime, and actually I always like to draw these little pictures. Let me just draw my little Venn diagram because I just like to do that. So here's B and here's A, and this is a Venn diagram. And these are actually the analogs of truth tables. Anyway, they're very helpful and kind of keep track of what's going on. Okay, so if, let's see, for every X, we have that X is in A implies that X is in B, okay? So that's what it means, and then we write, in which case we write, what I did on the other page. So A is a subset of B. Okay, so that's our definition. Okay, so now to the question, right? So the question, oh, sorry. Is that easier to see? Oh, the beginning. Here you mean, sorry, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's where notation started. Okay. All right. So now to the question. So lemma, if A is a set, then the empty set is a subset of A. Okay. So let's just try to prove this. Okay, so what does it say? It says we have to check that this is true, that for every X, we need to check that if X is in this empty set, then X is in B. All right, so proof, for all X, we have that X is not in phi, right? Because phi has the empty set, because the empty set has no elements, right? Hence, and actually I could write that in words. So so X in phi is false and implies anything. Therefore, we're done, right? So therefore, for all x, x in the empty set implies x is in A. Okay. So does that make sense? So QED. So that's the, okay, so I hope that that answered the question. So the question originally was why this empty set appeared, and this is why, because this is a power set is supposed to be all the subsets, and here we see that the empty set is always a subset. So this power set always contains the empty set and the original set, and then some other stuff in between typically, okay? Great. All right, any other questions about this notation?
Wait, so for the empty set being a part of, being a subset of A, wait, so how does the proof exactly work? Can you repeat that?
Let me just repeat the logic. So I could write it out in words, or I guess I use some symbols here. But what I said was that for every so what are we trying to get? This is the same as saying that the empty set is a subset of A, right? Because that's the definition of being a subset. So that part I hope is clear. This we need to, yeah, okay. So this is what we're trying to prove. All right. So let's do that. So we try to prove that. So this first statement, X is in the empty set, this is always false.
Because it contains no elements.
That's right. So this is false. And false statements imply anything. It doesn't matter what the truth value is over here. If this is false, then the first thing implies that the second one is always true. Right? If you remember from your truth table for implies. Yeah. So we're done. That's the logic.
Okay, you got it.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, let's just try a few examples of collections of sets that are possible or not possible. I'll just do one of them and then let you try them in some breakout rooms. And again, I think these Venn diagrams are handy for these. And then we'll maybe try writing out some of them as proofs once we know which ones are true and which ones are false. So which of the following are true? And most of them I'll have you do, so you might write them down. Okay, so this is the question we'd have. And so they're all of the following form. So there exists sets A, B, and C. With various properties. And I'll do this number zero here and then with one of, these are just five different questions, okay? So a problem zero. Let me do it this way. So B, here's a bit of notation I haven't used before, so that I think it'll be handy to introduce it. Subset not equal to A, and B is a subset of C, and actually I have four things I want here. So A is not a subset of C. And then my fourth one is that C is not a subset of A. And then I'm going to have a bunch more examples here that you can try on your own. But let's do zero here first. So let's see. So first of all, is this notation self-explanatory?
Wait, what's that notation?
It means a subset, but not equal to. It also has another name. It goes by the term proper. Okay. So it's like less than but not equal to. Okay. So that's a new bit of notation that I hadn't introduced before. Okay, and the others are notation that we have seen before. Okay. All right. Okay, so let's try this. So zero here. All right, so let's see, if this is going to be true, then I would have to, it's an existential, right? So that means that I have to find A, B, and C, and if it's not, then I have to find a proof that it doesn't, right? So one is by construction, and the other would be by like one of our other methods, like contradiction. Okay, so we can just start trying it. And what I like to do is draw these Venn diagrams like we have here and just see how we can do. So we have B is contained in C. So let's try drawing B here. And then I have some C that's smaller, okay, contained in it. And let's see if we can do this. So we have that A and C are not contained in one another, all right? And B is contained in A, okay, but it's not equal to it, okay? So B is contained in A, but it's not equal to, whoops, so here's my B, and this one's A, all right? Maybe I should use different colors. Okay. All right, and let's see. But then we're asking that A is not contained in C, and C is not contained in A. Okay, but as I've drawn it, C is contained in A. Okay, so is this one going to be forced? Oh, so first of all, okay, I drew my picture wrong, right? What did I do wrong here? Sorry, my fault. I wrote B is contained in C, but then I drew C is contained in B. I apologize. Let me just try it over. Okay, so I'm supposed to have B is the smaller one. B is contained in C. Sorry, I wrote it backward. Okay, and then we have that B is also contained in A, but not equal to it. And we have that B and A is not contained in C, and C is not contained in A. So this picture looks pretty good. And what I would do now is I would draw some elements in here. So here's an element, and I can just put an element there and maybe an element over here. And that might be enough elements, right? So that I have all the properties that I want. Okay. And then I'll just give them names. Let me see, R, S, T. Okay, and what have I done? I've built an example. And so zero, the answer is true. And since it's an existential problem, all we have to do is find an example. Dilemma. I'll come back to the dilemma as soon as I'm done with this example, which I'm almost done with. So I've given, so is it clear what this means? So A is equal to the set that contains R and S. That's what this means here. I have this element R and this element S all inside of this set A. So that's what the picture means. And B is, so is everyone following? Is it clear what sets B and C are? No, it's not supposed to be empty. Yeah, that's right. So so that little S is sitting inside of it. This little S here, that one's sitting inside of the B. Yeah, that's right. That's the one. So that's just that one that's sitting inside of there. And then C contains the little S in there. And then C contains both that little S and the T. Okay, so is that notation clear? So that's okay. And then so I built an example, and then I just have to check, and it works. Okay, so let me give you four others, and you can just try it, see which ones you think are true and which ones are false. There exist these A, B, and C. So one is going to be that, A is contained. Oh, sorry. Someone was asking about the meaning up here of this lemma. Let me come back to that first. So I'll draw these first so that you can write them while I'm explaining the meaning. So contained in B, B not contained in C, and A contained in C, or two, we're going to have A contained in B, B contained in C this time, and C contained in A. So that's C contained in A. Okay, and now I'll just have all of these proper. So exactly the same sequence, except they're all going to be proper. So not equals. Subset but not equals, and C is a subset but not equals A. Okay, and then the last one is a lot like the first one, so it's going to be, except I'm going to switch the first one, so I'm going to have B contained in A, and then the second two will be the same, so B is not contained in C, and A is contained in C. Okay, all right, so the first two are, the last first and last are related, and those two are related. Okay, anyway, so I'm going to give you a few minutes to do that, but first let me come to this question in the box. So it was that, what does this lemma mean? Okay, so the lemma says, maybe it's a little hard to read, but, and that's probably why people write this as phi, because it's hard to write the double braces. So that's supposed to be a right and a left parenthesis. So it's the empty set. It also goes by the name of phi. And it's the set that contains no elements. And what this lemma is telling us is that our concept of subset says that that is automatically a subset of everything. Okay, so any set A contains as a subset this boring set, the empty set that has nothing in it. Okay, that's exactly what this theorem is saying, and that's what this is proving down here. Did that clarify the lemma? Oh, what is a lemma? That's just another name for lemma. This is about the same as a claim or a proposition or a theorem. These are all basically the same, and I kind of use them interchangeably. Yeah, that's all. There are some subtle usage differences, but they're pretty minor. Okay, let's see. So let me just give you maybe 3 minutes to breakout rooms to figure out which of these four are true and which ones are false. Yeah, I guess I'll give you 3 minutes.